Her children told her that I had called. So she called me at my mother's home, and less than 4 hours after I had called her, when I heard her voice, it was sealed, it was confirmed by the Lord that this was the woman for me to marry. I asked her to come home, and she said, no, I asked her when was she coming home. Well, she said, I'll be home Monday. And I replied to her that all of them were coming home Monday. She asked me if I would like for her to come home earlier. I told her I did. And so she came home on Saturday evening, and she called me Saturday night. And I told her on the phone what the Lord had told me. The Lord had told me that is, after we had talked a while, I told her that the Lord had told me that she would be the woman for me to marry, and would she marry me? And, of course, after some hesitance, she said, well, yes, I guess I will. And we were engaged, and she then asked me to have dinner. Or at least she called back later and told me she wanted me for dinner the next Sunday. As a matter of fact, she wanted me to meet her children. And so she told me she would send for me, which she did. She got one of her friends to come over this Sunday morning, pick me up, take me to church. At that time, it was the Garden of Prayer. I wish Dr. Dabney was the minister, and Mother Dabney was the great mother. Went there that Sunday morning, and Dr. Dabney said to her, what are you doing here? Because they knew she wasn't supposed to come home until Monday. And one of her friends, called Vi, said to her, you know what, all eyes are on you, because everybody knew I was supposed to be there that Sunday. And she said she knew it. So after church, she took me home to dinner, where I met her children and became acquainted with them and became attached to them. I went from Philadelphia up to into New England, at New London, where my son lived. And so I asked her to come up Saturday because I wanted her to meet my children. I had met her children, and I wanted her to meet my children. So Saturday she came up on the train, and we were at church that Sunday. And that Monday I got the minister of the church, Elder Madre, to take me down and her down to Hartford, where she met our daughters, and they became attached to her. Then she came on back home to Philadelphia. I stayed in Hartford maybe 4 or 5 days and went on back to Philadelphia and stayed there 2 or 3 days. Then I caught a train and headed for Albany, where I was living at that time. We got to Waycross. Well, Mother Walker, one of my lifelong friends and one of God's great saints, were coming down also to Albany. So we came on the train together. When we got to Waycross, we had to change trains. In fact, we changed trains in Savannah. Then we had to change again in Waycross. And at Waycross, I took her bag, and I felt a pain. And, well, it wasn't around my heart, but it was in the lower part of my neck. I went on home to Albany, and that day I had dinner with Mother Watson. I walked around there to her home and ate, and it got worse. That Sunday morning, I got up and went to the radio station and preached on the air. When I came back, it became severe, so I called Dr. Griffin, and he suggested, when I described my feeling to him, he suggested that I come to the hospital as quickly as possible. So I got Elder J.I. Davis, two children, Lula Bell and Ozell, took me in my car and took me to Bainbridge to the hospital, and they went on to Cairo, where their father was the minister. And I remained in the hospital. But before I went to the hospital, I called Macy's home. She wasn't at home, but she had gone to church or somewhere. Anyway, I told her children that I was going to the hospital and gave them the number of the hospital. So she called me later on that day. I remained in the hospital there for 2 weeks, and the Lord blessed me to come back home. We were engaged to get married on the 24th of June, which was the fourth Sunday in June. I came out of the hospital and I stayed in for the week, and then I caught a plane. I drove to Atlanta, took a plane, flew to Philadelphia, and went to the home of a lady that had been saved under my ministry some years before in Albany. And there I stayed for that week and was in bed most of the week, resting, relaxing, because the doctor had advised me to do that. Anyway, the fourth Sunday in June, 1972, at the Garden of Prayer, Macy Lee Johnson became Macy Lee Dell. Her father and her brothers came up from North Carolina. My brother came from Cincinnati, and I had a brother that lived there. And the three of us met together there on the Sunday morning before I married, or the Sunday morning that I married. And it was the first time that the three of us had been together in more than 30 years. And it was a glorious meeting. And while we were talking, my daughter walked in, Helen, and her children and her sisters, and oh, it was a great time. So I got married, and we flew back from Philadelphia to Atlanta. The Eastern Airlines, on which I had a reservation, I found that they were going on strike, so I called United and made a reservation with the United Airlines for us to fly back into Atlanta by way of United. I had arranged with Mother and Brother Baby that we would be there for our honeymoon from Sunday night until Friday afternoon. And so we arrived there about 1 o'clock or 1:30. Mother Baby just opened the door and went on back to bed. And so we went. And it was a wonderful experience for me. So we stayed that with Mother Bivens from then until, I believe it was Friday. Mason and I fished, and we had a lot of fun. We took her to town. She had to get a new hairdo, and it was just a wonderful experience. I finally had a wife, and after 16 months of widowhood, or widower rather, and then the wife who was my children's mother had been sick for 20 years. She knew not what it was to travel with me any place. She was a semi-invalid. She wasn't supposed to cook for herself or for me or anyone else. She wasn't supposed to wash dishes. She wasn't supposed to do anything but try to live. And now here is a wife that can cook and that can take care of my clothes and what have you. It was a great and glorious experience. So we remained there until Friday.
We left Griffin Friday at about 12 o'clock. Drove to Macon to the home of the late Bishop and Mrs. E.W. Strickland, where, by prearrangement, we had dinner. Bishop Strickland had invited some of the people I had pastored in Macon in the early and mid-1940s. They came and had dinner with us. Among them were Sister Amanda Johnson, Sister Betsy Anderson, known as Sister Mattie, and perhaps one or two others whose name is not fresh in my memory now. We had dinner, and we conversed. We talked about old times and incidents that were familiar to all who were present, and they wished me a long and bright future. Macy and I left Macon for Albany around 2:45 because we had planned to drive into Albany at 6 o'clock. We drove to Albany at 6 o'clock on the dot, went to the home of Mother Matilda Watson, with whom we had arranged to live until we could buy a home such as we wanted. We drove up in the yard. Mother Watson came out the front door and met Macy, and they came attached to her immediately. Well, we went to church that night. She had been to Albany once before, but she went to church that night for the first time as Sister Macy Lee Dell. It was a very enjoyable time. All of the members of the church accepted her and received her very graciously. This was on Friday night. Elder J.I. Davis was conducting a district meeting at Dawson, which is about 23 miles from Albany. So I took the new bride over to Dawson on Saturday night, where she could meet and be met by the people of the district. Among the people there were the Bishop J.L. Littman, who was not a bishop at that time, but has been ascending to the bishopric since. Bishop Littman made the statement that have lived in my memory since. He said, well, one thing about Bishop Dell, he has good eyes. It meant that I could see well, and of course I agreed with him. And this was in 1962, in the month of June of 1962. In July of 1962, the 30th of July, Sister Macy began complaining with her back. And she complained so much that I took her to my old doctor, J.H. Griffin, who practiced in Bainbridge, in a private hospital that he had built there. He gave her a physical, and it was then that we learned, that I learned at least, that she had infection in her kidneys. Whether she knew this, I doubt. Now, Dr. Griffin told her that, and told me, that she could live a long time, yet if she ate right and took the right amount of rest and took care of herself, and God regarded her health as important. Well, she did live 7 years. This was in July the 31st of 1962. In August of 1962, I took her to the convocation for the first time. The convocation, as always, convened in the Jones Avenue Church, of which the late Bishop George Riley was pastor, as had been previously stated. And this was the first time since 1934 that I had ever had the privilege of taking a wife to the convocation. As previously stated, Sister Della was mother of 7 children. She didn't like to travel very much, and she did go with me to the convocation in Atlanta in 1934. So 1946 was the first time since 1934 that I'd had my wife with me in the convocation. This made the convocation something extra special to me. It was a kind of convocation that I had not known for over 20 years. And it was a kind of convocation that she had never known, because never had she been the wife of the presiding bishop of a state or jurisdiction. So it was a new experience for both of us. Everybody fell in love with her. Everybody loved her. And it was gracious and glorious. Then in September of 1972, we drove to Philadelphia, where we married. And it was a wonderful occasion for her and for me, because never had she visited any of her friends as the wife of a minister, and especially that of a bishop. So Mother Dabney, who was the power in the church apparent, had her sit in a special seat where she had always seated the wives of what she called dignitaries. So Macy had come from an usher to a dignitary, and from one who entertained Mother Dabney's guests to one who was being entertained by those who entertained Mother Dabney's guests. It was a royal experience for her, and it was also for me. And then in November of 1962, we went to Memphis to the convocation. I don't recall whether or not she'd ever attended a national convocation before, but I do recall that she attended them ever after, as long as she lived. There again, it was a great experience for me, because never in my life had I had a wife with me in the national convocation at Memphis. Never, never. And this was a new experience for me, and a new experience for my friends. Naturally, they were very glad that finally I was privileged to have, as many of them were, my wife with me by my side, lending her influence, her counsel, her devotion, and her assistance in whatever way she could. December the 12th, 1962, we rented a house. In fact, I rented that house with an option to buy. It was a new house that was built, and nobody had ever lived in it. In fact, it wasn't complete. We had to remain at Mother Watson until the house was finished, and on the 12th of December, 1962, we moved into a new house. It was not a fine house, it was not elaborate, but it was very nice and comfortable. It was, one of the most comfortable that I'd ever lived in, and certainly the most comfortable I'd ever owned. It was the first house that she'd ever owned since she left the home of her father. So this just about wound out 1962, with one exception. I had almost forgotten to mention that Macy had a son named Benjamin. They called him Benny. And when we married in June, her father took him down to Whiteboro, North Carolina with him. And so Benjamin stayed there until the convocation. They put him on the train, and I believe it was maybe in Sumter, South Carolina. No, it was Florence. They put him on the train in Florence, South Carolina. And he came to Atlanta. I remember well, we met him at the train. I remember seeing him walking with his little suitcase in his hand. He was tired because he'd been up all night. So we drove on back to Albany after buying him some of the things he needed. The civil rights movement was very active in Albany at this time. So this Christmas, we did not put up any Christmas lights because the Albany movement had asked all black folk to abstain from putting up Christmas lights and let it be a dark Christmas because of the vicious evils of segregation and this struggle that black people had trying to win their civil rights that were really theirs. It was very unusual to Macy, and strange indeed. I could hardly restrain her from putting up lights, but I was finally able to convince her that if we put up lights, they would break our windows, and being leaders, we could not afford to really resist the will of the majority. And I dare say about 95% of the black people of Albany, we did not put up any Christmas lights that year. In the year 1963, we had our call meeting on the jurisdictional level and decided that we would hold the state workers meeting at Soperton that year.